I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest, Dr. John McGrail, PhD, is a hypnotherapist, personal success coach, spiritual teacher, and a leading media expert on the topic of personal improvement. A former military officer, aviator, and mass media professional. He has combined more than 30 years of teaching, coaching, and mentoring experience with his work in clinical hypnosis to create what is called synthesis, a powerful process for creating personal change and transformation quickly and profoundly. Synthesis integrates science and spirit through a mixture of models, techniques, traditional, and wisdom. Dedicated to the art and science of personal empowerment, Dr. McGrail has helped thousands of people, clients, and workshop students bring lasting change, growth, and transformation with every aspect of their lives. Synthesis began with rule number one, life is supposed to be fun. Dr. McGrail's writings and expertise have been featured in numerous national publications and major online outlets such as Time, Reader's Digest, Self, Cosmopolitan, Ladies' Home Journal, Chicago Tribune, New York Daily News, WebMD, Lifestrong.com, She Knows, Intent, and so forth. He is a frequent guest on radio and television shows across the country and abroad. His book, The Synthesis Effect, by Career Press in 2012, shares and teaches his synthesis techniques. Dr. McGrail resides in Los Angeles, California. His website can be found at www.drjohnmcgrail.com and www.hypnotherapylosangeles.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. McGrail, and I look forward to hearing about synthesis and how we can use this to improve our life and our health. Now first, what is synthesis?
Well, Carl, in essence, it is a technique and a method that synthesizes both cognitive, conscious, logical models and techniques, the sort of thinking that we're most used to in Western culture, with the more powerful subconscious part of the mind, which is where most of our emotions and behaviors actually arise and sort of dwell. And what we do, basically, is using a variety of tools, techniques, methods, and traditions, bring the two parts of the mind together to work in unison, and that helps create change and personal transformation very quickly and very profoundly for most people. Mm-hmm. And that is why I call the process synthesis, because it is bringing disparate models, techniques, methods, traditions together in synthesis to create a better you, which is the name of my company, A Better You.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So then, in essence, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Then how does synthesis work?
Well, again, it works by using the way we are taught to think, I'll believe it when I see it, and combining very logical, easy-to-understand models to help a person understand, first and foremost, how and why their issues developed and how the mind works. Because most of the clients that I see, and this has been going on for years, when they come in, of course, first thing I'll say is, how long have you been suffering from your issue, whatever it may be, low self-esteem or low self-confidence or you name it, or a habit that they don't like, whatever. It doesn't really matter what it is. But over and over again, you know, I'll say, how long have you been suffering from this? Oh, years. And then I'll say, well, when did it start or how did it start? I have no idea. And so the way synthesis works is first and foremost to establish understanding. And when you establish that understanding, first of all, the person realizes that they're not alone, because most people think they are, and they also realize that it's not their fault. The way the human mind has evolved makes us very, very resistant to change. Even when the change is going to be positive and we want it, we are hardwired. It's in our very DNA to resist any change. And once they realize why that is, and it's not them, it's not a weakness in them, which is what most people think, the second step is to then say, okay, now you understand how you got to be the way you are, and it's not your fault, although you did create it. Now, here are some tools that will help you make that change, and here's a method through which to use the tools to make the change happen quickly and profoundly. So it's sort of a three-step process, if you will, and that's how the book is set up.
And is there a limit to what synthesis can be used for?
Well, I'm sure there are limits to everything. I mean, there is no silver bullet, and I certainly don't claim that my process is such. You know, certain mental illnesses or organic brain damage would not respond to this method. But for the most part, for the worried well of the world, which is about 85% of us, yes, it can work for changing anything from physical issues to emotional issues and of course, even spiritual issues. So the things that I tend to work with are things like low self-esteem or low self-confidence, relationship issues, habits and addictions, some that are hard to kick, like smoking or, in certain cases, drinking and other substances, although that's a slippery slope. But also fears and phobias and limiting beliefs, like I don't deserve to be happy, or people who, you know, for whatever reason can't get on an airplane and fly across the country to see their relatives. It can be any number of issues, and it works really, really well because all of that, all of these issues are created in the mind, and we're using the very thing that creates the issues to help it change itself.
And can anyone benefit from this process?
Absolutely. Anybody who consciously wants to make a change in their life, and that's really the first requirement, you have to really not just not like where you are, but you have to say, you know, I really would like things to be different. And it's got to be for yourself. It can't be because someone else thinks you'll be better off for it or that you're doing it for someone else. It has to be a sincere, conscious desire on your part to create the change, whatever the change is. And then if you're willing to commit to yourself, because it is a process, it's not magic, and as I'm sure you're aware, you know, in modern society, we are really keyed into this concept of instant gratification, especially with technology being what it is. We want everything right now, and we don't have to work for it if we don't have to. And it is a process, so you have to commit to yourself and the process and do the work. It's not hard, but it does take that commitment. And then, yes, if you have those two ingredients in place, then this process works for virtually anybody.
And how long does it take to see a change?
Well, most people see a change right away. Now, when I say that with the qualification that they see the beginning of change right away. How long it takes for everything to be where they want it to be, it varies with individuals, because as I'm sure you can appreciate, every mind is different, every person is different, every issue, even if it's similar, has different triggers, associations, and histories, etc. And so we have to treat each individual person as the individual they are. No two minds are alike. But that said, or I should say and, that said, for most people it's a very quick process. Most of the clients I work with one-on-one are with me from, on average, 2 to 5 weeks. And that's usually all it takes. Some people need a little longer, and some people respond even more quickly than that. But compared to months and months and months and months of conventional therapy, which for years, for that matter, I've had many clients that say, you know, I've been in therapy for years, and I never felt there was much of a change. And suddenly 3 weeks later, after we started working with your process, I feel like a new person. So comparatively speaking, it is very powerful, and I think the reason for that is because we are working with the subconscious mind, which creates almost all of our strengths and our weaknesses and our issues.
And how does hypnosis play into this process?
Glad you asked that question, because a lot of people don't understand hypnosis, and it is, first and foremost, a natural state of consciousness. Every normal human brain enters what we would call hypnotic trance several times every day of your life. The way it plays into it is that state of consciousness that we call hypnosis, and again, natural and consciousness are the two operative words because you're always awake and aware when you're in hypnosis. It creates a very open, receptive state of mind. What it does, in essence, is it helps us bypass that natural resistance to change that we all have. So it's kind of like providing a key to the door of the subconscious mind, which operates very much like a computer, believe it or not. We are programmed for the people that we're going to be very early in life, and once those programs are in place and reinforced, they become very automatic. Our values, our attitudes, our beliefs, our personalities, most of that is formed when we're really quite young. And the subconscious mind, once it has that programming, will play those patterns over and over and over again. Good or bad doesn't matter because it can't tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so what hypnosis does, and its close cousin meditation, which is essentially the same state of consciousness, is it allows us to get by the natural resistance to change that every human being has. And once you get by that natural resistance, the subconscious mind is willing to, in essence, figuratively, dump the old software or the old programs that aren't working and take on new ones.
Mm-hmm.
And with reinforcement, they become as automatic as the old ones were.
Mm-hmm. And this process is based upon the concept that we create our own reality. Can
That's
you
correct.
Explain to the listeners what this means to you and if you have proof of this?
Well, what it means to me is that through our thoughts, through our the energy of our thoughts and behaviors, we attract a like energy back. There's a physical law called the law of attraction. We know that all energy flows along lines of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an enormous body of scientific evidence, most of which comes from the field of quantum physics, which is the study of matter and energy. There's an enormous amount of experimental evidence that has proven, beyond the shadow of a doubt, that our thoughts have energy, and the energy has an effect on our environment.
Mm-hmm.
So in essence, what scientists are proving is that whether we know it or not, it feels like life is happening to us.
Mm-hmm.
We feel like victims of our circumstances when, in essence, we are creating what we're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult at first sometimes to wrap your mind around that. And I spent a fair amount of time in the book providing the scientific evidence, some of the experimental evidence that's there, and explaining how that works. But in essence, what has to happen to create real change in your life is not to expect it to come from some outside agency. If you and when you accept that you are creating your reality, good or bad, happy or sad, you are responsible for it, and then you take responsibility for creating a new reality, you actually begin the process of becoming empowered.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there are if you can go online and just Google it, and the experimental evidence is amazing. I mean, it's mind-boggling. What is now being proved scientifically is what the ancient cultures thought millennia ago. But we do, in fact, through our energy, through the energy of our thoughts, we actually create and have an effect on the environment we live in. And so
mm-hmm.
that becomes a very powerful tool in the process of change, because if you can change the way you think, the way you behave, and it becomes automatic, then you're going to start attracting different energy back. And that's
mm-hmm.
essentially how
mm-hmm.
it works.
Mm-hmm. We also affect our own body with our thoughts. So
absolutely. There's a perfect example right there. And, countless records of people who have been diagnosed with terminal illnesses,
mm-hmm.
and the Western doctors basically say, look, there is no hope for you. We can't help you. Go home and get your affairs in order. And then through the power of the mind and changing their energy, they have literally cured themselves. And there are just too many cases documented to even mention. We often call it the placebo effect, and that is also well documented, where you give someone with a disease a sugar pill, and because they think it's medicine, the disease goes away.
Mm-hmm.
The mind is an amazing and very, very powerful entity,
mm-hmm.
and this is what synthesis is all about. It's tapping into that ability, that power, which we all have
mm-hmm.
and can use with the right assistance. Most people do need a little help, and that's what this is to provide that help.
And we know so little about the mind at this point.
Yes, and we're learning more and more every day, and it's
mm-hmm.
so cool because the more we learn, the more control we actually get. And what I find ironic is that modern science is sort of proving what, as I mentioned a few minutes
mm-hmm.
ago, ancient
mm-hmm.
cultures intuitively knew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at the native indigenous cultures of the world, and just take our Native Americans, they have a very different way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
We think in this way. We've been taught this for about the last 500 or 600 years. I'll believe it when I see it. Show me the proof. That's how Westerners
right.
think. And the indigenous cultures of the world think exactly the opposite. They believe in order to see,
mm-hmm.
because they knew a long time ago, intuitively, I suppose, that the way they thought, the way they acted was going to have a huge effect on their results. And
mm-hmm.
so one of my favorite Native American shamans' name is Frank Foolscrow, who was a Ogallala Sioux, one of the most powerful shamans in the entire history of the Sioux Nation. And in his great book, and I highly recommend it to anybody, it's called Frank Foolscrow, Wisdom and Power, he says this over and over again. He says, we must learn to think the old ways. Mm-hmm. We cannot believe mm-hmm. in order to, we have to believe in order to see rather than having to see in order to believe mm-hmm. if you really want to create empowerment. And it turns out that's exactly the way, apparently, the world works, according to the latest science.
I was surprised to hear recently that our mind also influences our DNA.
Yes.
Because I had always thought that was set at birth and, you know, not much changed. But I interviewed Dawson Church and in epigenetics, and it was a whole new field for me because I didn't know anything about it before.
Yes, epigenetics is absolutely fascinating. In fact, I do spend some time in the book discussing that. And in essence, it is exactly what you said, is that just because we have a gene for a certain trait mm-hmm. or a certain condition mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily mean that it will be expressed. It's not hardwired. Mm-hmm. Environmental input, which of course includes our thoughts, our beliefs, mm-hmm. how we think and behave, has a huge effect. And so many times people with the gene for, say, a certain terminal illness or a disease or a characteristic mm-hmm. won't have it expressed because we can, through the power of our mind, actually have an effect on which parts of our DNA actually manifest and which don't. Mm-hmm. It's just mind-boggling
right.
to me and to most people who were trained with conventional science, as mm-hmm. I was. But fascinating because it gives us an awful lot more potential for controlling our outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, right. And what is new about your method that has not been discussed before?
Well, you know, I say this openly and honestly, even in my book. I don't know if there's anything necessarily new about my method, except that because the wisdom and the techniques that I practice and use have been around for 7,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what's different, and again, I'm gratified that I've got proof now because when you write a book, you have an intention. This is what I want it to do, and it all looks good. And there was a publisher that thought, okay, well, this is good enough. They published it, but the proof, the pudding, of course, is the results, and that's the readers. So, what I think is different about my method is that I think the way it's presented, the perspective that I present the information from, and the techniques, the way they're put together, I think is unique to a lot of people, and reader reviews on Amazon, if any of your listeners go to Amazon and look up the book, The Synthesis Effect, and just read the reviews, it seems to be, you know, over and over again, I'm hearing from people all around the world, because it is published in other countries now, China and Malaysia,
mm-hmm.
but I keep hearing over and over again, I never understood this stuff until I read your book, and I've mm-hmm. been reading self-help books all my life, and now I get it. Thank you so much. So while I don't necessarily think it's new, mm-hmm. the way it's presented, the perspective, mm-hmm. and the way the models, techniques are put together mm-hmm. is what makes this new and, if you will, revolutionary, if you want to use that word, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But that seems to be what the case is, and the readers are sort of the proof of the pudding.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Thank you.
Then you mentioned the need to be at cause instead of at effect
yes.
in order to empower your life. What does that mean?
Well, again, it goes back to what we were discussing a few minutes ago. In essence, we believe and we feel and we think that life is happening to us. We are the victims of circumstance, so to speak. And that is what we call, in my parlance, living at effect.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, woe is me. There's nothing I can do about this. This is just the cards I've been dealt, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Living at cause is a two-step thing. First of all, you acknowledge that you are creating your own reality. Because, again, the science says we are, so mm-hmm. we might as well get with the program. The science doesn't lie. So once you acknowledge that you are creating your reality, good or bad, happy or sad, then the next thing is to say, okay, since I'm causing it, I'm going to live at cause. I am going to take responsibility for how my life works. It's no one else's job to create happiness for me. It's no one else's job to make sure that I have love. It's no one else's job to make my life meaningful and joyful and prosperous and successful. It's my job. It's my responsibility because it's my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that that attitude has a huge effect on how you can or cannot change your life. Once you take that stance, if you will, and choose to truly live at cause, be responsible for how your life works, things begin to change very quickly. And the way I like to describe the process is it's kind of like pushing a snowball over a hill, and it begins to roll down the hill, and the snow is very wet and very sticky. And the metaphor, of course, is that as the snowball gets bigger and bigger, it gets heavier and heavier, and it gets more and more powerful and massive, and pretty soon nothing can stop the momentum of it. And that's pretty much how this process works. Mm-hmm. Once you acknowledge and accept and embrace living at cause, mm-hmm. taking responsibility for how your life goes and not blaming everybody else for your problems mm-hmm. and what's not working, that's like that little snowball starts rolling downhill, and pretty soon you are a dynamo of what I like to call manifestation. Mm-hmm. But what you're manifesting is what you want, and that creates a very pleasant life.
I'm so glad we're giving parents a break now.
Well, the truth of the matter is, you and I both know it. Parents, you know, kids don't come with instructions, and, right. and I say this all the time. Most parents aren't very good at it. I mean, let's just call it what it is. Most parents make mistakes. All mm-hmm. parents make mistakes. Mm-hmm. Some of them make a lot of mistakes. And when we are very young, I suppose we could say, because I get this all the time in the clinic, well, what about the fact that I was only 5 years old and my mother was laughing at me because I, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are sort of victims when we're little kids because we don't have any frame of reference to compare the way we're being treated with. Mm-hmm. And of course, those are the two big people in our life, our mom and dad, or if we have both of them, or whomever it is. They're like gods. But guess what? If you're 25 or 30 or 40 or 50, okay, that game is over. You know, that right. ship has sailed, so you can blame them if you want, but hey, here you are. You don't have to listen to any of that anymore. And it's not a stretch to show how I'm not sure exactly the word I'm looking for now, so forgive me, but it doesn't take very long to disprove and show the folly of, you know, some of the things that we're taught, mm-hmm. most of which or many of which in Western culture are self-denigrating and self-deprecating. You know, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not sexy enough, I'm not enough because mom and dad told mm-hmm. me I wasn't. Mm-hmm. Well, there's no truth in that. That's just two people's opinions. Yeah, they were your mother and father, but they're no more qualified to judge you than anybody else on the planet.
Right.
So let's just get off that train and start taking responsibility for your life now, because you don't have to listen to it anymore. There's mm-hmm. no truth to it. So it's like living with the belief the earth is flat. Now you know the earth isn't flat. Why would you keep that belief? And mm-hmm. By the way, I use that metaphor a lot because it's so powerful.
Mm-hmm. I believe a little bit differently than a lot of people, but I believe that we pick our parents because we have lessons to learn as souls, and the parents will give us the experiences that we need for our own soul growth. So it still goes back to our decisions that we make, and it's then what you would call still a cause instead of an effect. Is that right?
Yes, and I actually completely agree with you, and you know, very often when I'm working in a seminar or a workshop or with a private client in my clinical practice, and we get to this little state, we talk about the concept that, you know, there's a lot of evidence that does suggest that we in the spiritual realm pre-choose our parents mm-hmm. and the mm-hmm. circumstances with which we're going to come into this lifetime because mm-hmm. we have lessons to learn and we know they're going to give them to us. You know, there's also a lot of thinking around the fact that different entities, different souls, or a group of souls kind mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. hang around together lifetime right. after lifetime mm-hmm. and trade places. You know, so the person who's your brother might have been your mother, or you might have been their father, or whatever, in a past lifetime or a future lifetime. But yeah, I do mm-hmm. agree with you completely mm-hmm. that we choose those circumstances. We can't remember it, obviously, and sometimes we'd say, why on God's green earth would I have chosen this, because it really isn't working so well. However, once we do learn those lessons, and very often the lesson is, you know what, there's no truth to this belief that I'm not good enough, mm-hmm. and it's mm-hmm. just that. But yes, I totally agree with you on that point.
It's interesting how if we don't learn the first time around, we keep getting these experiences over and over and over again until we learn the lesson.
True enough. That is absolutely the case, and that's one of the reasons that I see people over and over again, falling back into their old dysfunctional patterns until you finally, say, okay, there's got to be another way. There's that old saying, it's very cliche, that, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. The cliches get to be cliches because they're true.
Right.
So, yeah, if you're going through the same patterns over and over again and the change you want isn't happening, then maybe it's time to take a look and maybe do things a different way.
Right. What is practical enlightenment, and can anyone achieve this? I guess it's a state, but I'd like to think of things as a little bit more dynamic than a state. But
yeah, well, the way I define practical enlightenment is to take the word enlightenment and start there. And there are a lot of different definitions, but one of the descriptions of enlightenment that I like the best, because it's simple, it's pragmatic, and is the Buddha's. And the Buddha said, enlightenment is the end of suffering. And I just don't think it can be expressed any better than that. I love that, because once you release yourself from the suffering that we so, sort of just immerse ourselves in, and again, I think a lot of that's a product of the way Western culture has evolved. But once you release the suffering, then you are enlightened. And so practical enlightenment is simply this. It is creating a state of life. It is creating a life that is virtually free of suffering. And I say virtually free because I think as long as we are in human form, it can't be perfect. Mm-hmm. But it can be very close to perfect. And, I don't mean to sound immodest, but I find over and over again that if people truly commit to the synthesis process, or any process that works for them, synthesis doesn't, although it seems to work for most people, if you do this and you're diligent about it, and again, I'll repeat what I said earlier, it does take some effort. It's not magic. It seems magical to some folks because it happens so quickly, but if you practice this enough and you're diligent with it, and again, that's simply a commitment to yourself. It's a commitment to your life. It's being at cause and taking that responsibility. It doesn't take very long for a lot of the suffering that you're used to go away. And so you can attain, anyone has the ability to create a life that is virtually free of suffering. Painless? Absolutely, no. But even the painful experiences become much easier to process because you're doing it from a much different state of mind. That's what I call practical enlightenment. And boy, when you get there, and it doesn't have to take a long time, and all it takes is some commitment and consistency, then life gets to be very, very fun, which is rule number one in my method.
Great. Then how long does it take to overcome an issue using this method? An issue like chronic stress or anxiety?
Well, again, every human mind is individual, and every case of stress or anxiety or anything has its own particular individual characteristics. The symptoms and the overall effect, behavioral effect, may be similar, but the history, the triggers, the associations are all unique to individuals. That's maybe a wordy way of saying that how long it takes really depends on the individual. Most people, if they commit and really do the work, begin to experience change right away, and it doesn't take very long for most folks. And when I work with someone one-on-one, on average, we work together from 2 to 5 weeks-ish. That's just sort of a ballpark. As I mentioned before, some people get it very quickly, and some people need a little bit more time, depending on their particular issues and circumstances. And because there are so many factors involved with human behavior, you can't just say, well, it's this. There's no pat answer. However, because I think we're leveraging and using both the conscious cognitive mind and the more powerful and more massive unconscious mind, and because we bring a very heavy dose of spirituality into the process, for most people, it's a pretty quick deal because they start feeling good right away, and then they realize, well, if I can feel this good right away, why not? I'm just going to keep going with this. And the next thing you know, they're kind of walking on air. It feels that way. It's just so marvelous to be free of it all.
Right.
Yeah.
Dr. McGale, would you tell us about the book and your services and how listeners can reach you?
Sure, I'd be happy to. The title of my book is The Synthesis Effect, and then there's a subtitle, Your Direct Path to Personal Power and Transformation, which is a mouthful. But if you want, if you're interested, it's The Synthesis Effect. It is available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. It's had its first run in stores, and until the second printing, you probably won't find it in stores. But, you know, most people don't buy books in stores anymore, unfortunately.
No.
But it is available at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. And again, you know, it, just take a look at it. Read the reviews, if anyone's even vaguely interested. Just read what readers have to say. I mean, the proof in the pudding is the pudding, and the pudding is the readers and how it's affected their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as my services are concerned, I have clients literally around the globe because a lot of what I do can be done remotely. I can be reached through my websites, www.drjohnmcgrail, all one word, J-O-H-N, M as in Michael C, capital G-R-A-I-L, McGrail.com, drjohnmcgrail.com. And my, if people are more interested in the hypnotherapy end of things, I have a site that's more geared toward that discipline because I use it a lot, Hypnotherapy Los Angeles, all spelled out, all one word, .com. So www.hypnotherapylosangeles.com. And there's even a website for the book, www.synthesiseffect.com. Not to confuse anybody, but you can take a look at the book, read a sample chapter, and again, you know, kind of look at what readers have had to say.
Right.
And if people do reach out to me through email or via telephone, I do attempt to answer as inquiries personally as much as I can. If I get a lot of questions or letters, which sometimes happens after a show like this, that are sort of centrally themed, then sometimes I'll address that because, you know, logistically I can't necessarily call everybody because sometimes I get hundreds of calls or hundreds of emails.
Right.
Then I'll put the answer to those questions in a blog post or in a newsletter, and anybody can go to my website, drjohnmcgrail.com, and sign up for my newsletter, which comes out once or twice a month, and, you know, when there's something interesting to pass. But I do try to answer people individually. In fact, I just got an email this morning from someone who found the book through a show like yours and emailed me, and when we get off the air, I'm going to be emailing that person back and giving them some guidance. And I really, truly love to do that. So don't be shy if you're out there and you have questions. I'm happy to try to help you through that.
That's great. I try to do that with the cancer patients that I hear from, and usually it's around 60 a month, but I always make that my priority.
Absolutely, and that's wonderful. I applaud you for that. That means you're walking the walk and talking the talk, which is really the most important thing.
Right. Well, I appreciate this very much, Dr. McGrail, and I know it'll be helpful to the listeners, and I am happy that it has a very strong spiritual component, which I think is sometimes lacking in the whole health area.
Well, quite frankly, I think it's lacking in our culture. We have inadvertently over the last 500 or 600 years since modern, what we call contemporary science and philosophy was developed, I think we lost our sense of spirit. And, and as you know, when we talk about spirituality, it's not religion. It is a completely different thing most of the time. And so, yes, this comes with a very high dose of spirituality because, again, our ancestors, you know, lived in a very balanced, very spiritual way. And a lot of the diseases and maladies that we suffer from today didn't exist then. And until they're exposed to Western culture and thinking, and then they get them too. So, yeah, there's a lot of that. And I so appreciate your kindness and generosity having me on today and letting me share what I do with some folks. And I greatly, greatly appreciate that.
Thank you, Dr. McGrail.
Well, thank you, Carl. You have a great day, and God bless.
Thank you. My second guest, Tom North, is the award-winning author of the book, True North, The Shocking Truth About Yours, Mine, and Ours. He appears on radio and television programs and is a keynote speaker at colleges, universities, and conferences. Tom is committed to raising awareness of all forms of child abuse and domestic violence and the devastating effects it can have on healthy human spirit and life itself. He is dedicated to helping people realize their true identity and their potential for healing. Tom is an official sponsor of National CASA for Children. In his book, True North, The Shocking Truth About Yours, Mine, and Ours, Tom North writes about his experience as the 11th of the 20 Beardsley children, made famous in the 1968 film Yours, Mine, and Ours, with Lucille Ball playing the role of the mother and Henry Fonda as the father. The film was a critical and box office success. However, the loving family portrayed in the film differs dramatically from the actual Beardsley family. Tom shares what it was like to grow up in that family, taking the road less traveled through child abuse, domestic violence, and despair, to hope, and eventually to self-discovery and a fulfilling life. More information is available at www.TrueNorthByTomNorth.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Tom, and I look forward to hearing your story about childhood abuse and domestic violence in a family portrayed in the movie Yours, Mine, and Ours. Now first, why did you write the book about your experience?
I wrote True North, The Shocking Truth About Yours, Mine, and Ours because over the years, I had social conversations with people where they recommended that I write a book. And they did so because in chapters 26 and 27, I wrote about the family therapy sessions that I took my 20 siblings through, and or I should say 19 siblings. There were 20 children in the family. And during those sessions, which were very, very productive, some of us of the North Beardsley siblings agreed never to support the fantasy of the Yours, Mine, and Ours movie ever again. And in subsequent conversation, when people would ask me how closely the film reflected real life, if it was appropriate, I would share with them the real story. And over the years, several of these people came back to me and said, you know, based on what you shared with me about your family therapy sessions, I went back and addressed issues in my own family life, and I got resolution. So thank you for sharing that with me because it helped me. And so I realized that this story was helping people, and that we human beings have so much more in common than that which differentiates us. And unfortunately, one of the things that many of us have in common is domestic violence and child abuse.
Right.
And so I decided to write the story for a broader audience. And it seems that it was a good thing to have written because hundreds of people have come back to me having read the book and thanked me for doing so.
Great.
Excuse me for my long-winded answer to your question.
Right. What happened when Lucille Ball visited your family before making the movie?
So when Lucille Ball had the idea of making the film, that was in 1961, and she came to visit the family in Carmel, California, where we lived at the time, and she wanted to learn something about the character that she was going to play in the film and to meet the children. And very soon after meeting my mother and my stepfather, Frank Beardsley, she took my mother aside and she said, "You keep that man away from me." Now, she had picked up on his energy, and she didn't like it at all, which is a very interesting observation.
Right. Then, Tom, can you tell us about your life in this family?
Well, now, I became a member of the Beardsley family when I was 7 years old. My father, Richard North, was a Navy aviator who was killed in a training exercise. And he left his wife, my mother, with seven children, and she was pregnant. So when she had her eighth child, she was 30 years old, And she met this man, Frank Beardsley, who had 10 children. So 8 and 10 is ridiculous, but that's what happened. And then they had two more.
Mm-hmm.
So the life I had before the Beardsley family was a very loving household that was exemplified by lots of laughter in the home and hugging and kissing and lots of frivolity and playing between the parents and the children.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got to the Beardsley household, it was as though someone had just drawn a dark curtain over life itself. It was Frank Beardsley was abusive. He was criminally abusive and extremely violent. And my mother, Helen North Beardsley, married him because she thought she could save his children from him
mm-hmm.
and save him from himself. So my experience in that household was really a descent into a very, very dark place. And it was very hard
mm-hmm.
to be in that family environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When did you escape, and what was the turning point in your life?
I left the Beardsley household as soon as I could, which was when I graduated from high school. And so I was 17 years old, and I went out on my own. The turning point in my life was when I began to practice transcendental meditation. Having had such a difficult childhood experience, I was sullen. I was depressed much of the time. I had fallen into drug use and drug abuse and spent about 5 years between the ages of 17 and 22 using drugs almost every day. And so I was a mess. And then I began to practice transcendental meditation, and I quit taking drugs altogether. And my life turned around. I began to see a more positive, much brighter perspective on the world. And that was really the turning point in my life.
Mm-hmm. Great. And what message of hope do you have for listeners who may be in a child abuse situation or are survivors?
Well, that's a very good question. And really, two-thirds of my book, True North, The Shocking Truth About Yours, Mine, and Ours, is about recovery. It's about survival and hope. And it, you know, many of us have difficult early lives. And while that is unfortunate, it is possible to take the broken pieces of your life and mend them and put them back together and live a happy, fulfilling, productive life. And that's really the message of my book, True North, The Shocking Truth About mm-hmm. Yours, Mine, and Ours.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then tell us about the work you do with National CASA for Children.
Yes. Now, CASA, which stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocates for Children, is a national organization which steps in at the behest of the court to help children survive and relocate from abusive households.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have become a national sponsor for CASA, and I do fundraising events for them. I do the keynote speaker role mm-hmm. at their fundraising events, and we just did one a few months ago here in Monterey, which is near where I live, and we doubled the attendance, and we doubled the amount of money that they raised.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Due to my presentation, so I'm very, very proud of that.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good. Tom, after people read your book, what do they tell you?
You know, Carl, I've been very gratified when people come up to me and say, I read your book, and I had a dysfunctional family, too. And you've given me a voice that I've never had, and I thought no one would ever understand me.
Mm-hmm.
But having read your book, I know I'm not crazy, and I know I'm not alone. and thank you for writing your book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been the theme that people have shared with me.
Great. Good. I sometimes think that maybe all families were dysfunctional, but I may be wrong.
Well, you know, in the business world, we think of something, because I'm a financial advisor and have been for 33 years, and one of the things that we observe in business is something called the 80-20 rule, or it's also known as Pareto's principle, and that is that in any system, you will get 80% of the energy out of 20% of the units in that system,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. You'll get 20% of the energy out of 80% of the units. And we see this in social systems, where in any employment situation, 80% of the productivity will come out of 20% of the employees,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we also see this in other applications. And my guess, although I haven't done the research and collected the data, is that probably 80% of American families and families around the world are dysfunctional,
mm-hmm.
and 20% of them are well-balanced and well-adjusted.
Mm-hmm. I should have asked you, did your mother stay with Beardsley till the end?
That's a very good question. You know, she left him about 10 years before she passed away in the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So she left him in 1990,
mm-hmm.
shortly after the family therapy sessions. And she was in a position where her health was failing.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat down with her and I said, Mom, I said, you have to understand that every night you get into bed with the man who beat your sons and molested your daughters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I said, that is a toxic environment to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, so if you stay with him, you will die.
Mm-hmm.
And if you die, you will leave him.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could take control of your life and leave him while you're still alive and then try to make some sense out of the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And she dismissed my idea and she said, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. And then she went to visit her sister, who has always been her confidant. And her sister told her exactly the same thing,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
without any conversation between me and my aunt.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mother called me from my aunt's home, and she said, you know, you were right, and I'm going to leave Frank Beardsley. And she did,
mm-hmm.
and lived the last 10 years of her life on her own.
So she had a good 10 years.
Well, she actually had, her health continued to decline.
Oh.
I tried to get her into some holistic health practices,
mm-hmm.
and for a while that worked. But as my brother likes to say, I think she died of a guilty conscience.
Oh.
In the family environment where she had wonderful intentions,
mm-hmm.
she really lost control of it,
mm-hmm.
and was never able to save Frank Beardsley's children from him,
mm-hmm.
Or him from himself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was a problem for her.
Mm-hmm. Then, Tom, can you tell us how the listeners can locate your book?
So my book can be purchased at most outlets such as Amazon.com or your local bookstore, but it's also available on my website, which is TrueNorthByTomNorth.com.
Mm-hmm.
And if your listeners purchase the book on our website, 10% of the proceeds of sale go to the CASA organization,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which we support through book sales.
Great. Good.
That's TrueNorthByTomNorth.com.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate this very much, Tom. It was great talking with you and hearing a little bit of the background on the movie that I did see years ago. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Carl. And I'd love to have another conversation with you sometime later when we can just chat about your life.
Great.
It sounds like a fascinating one.
Good. Thank you. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all previous radio shows under the blog for the last 5.5 years. You will also find current research on natural ways to deal with cancer. My second website, beatlungcancer.net, where under the blog, you will find many of the radio shows and television shows that I have done over the last year about this book. You will also find the endorsements. You will find other information about the book. You will also find a section where you can buy this book and one of my other books, Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. I invite you to my Facebook pages. One is on Beat Lung Cancer and another on the Holistic Health Show. I also have a page under my name, Carl Helvey. I invite you to join me on LinkedIn under my name, Carl Helvey. And I invite you to join me on Twitter under Holist Health Show, HOLISTHEALTHSHO. I will tell you briefly about my latest book, You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions. It discusses my experience with lung cancer 39 years ago when I was given 6 months to live and subsequently used all natural interventions. I discuss how I have stayed healthy and prevented a recurrence for the 37 years since I overcome lung cancer. There are chapters by Dr. Bernie Siegel, Dr. Francisco Contreras, and Dr. James Forsyth on other ways to deal with lung cancer. There's a chapter by Dr. Kim Dassel on nutrition and lung cancer, and a chapter on Tanya Harder Pierce on Protocell as a way of treating lung cancer. I also share with you the how-tos of many of the holistic interventions that I used when I had lung cancer. For example, how to meditate, how to visualize, how to do affirmations, how to strengthen your faith, etc. If you wish to reach me and you have a cancer problem, I'm always happy to communicate with others and share the resources that I have. And you can reach me at carlhelvey@cox.net. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a great week.